Welcome back to Irish Illustrated Insider. It is Monday, August 17th. I'm Tim O'Malley, joined by Drew Bentock and Tim Priester of Irish Illustrated. And guys, 1 year ago today, August 17th, almost everyone in the media believed Kenny Minchie was about to be named the starting quarterback. 2 days later, it was CJ Carr. And that's why that was camp drama. And there is not as much camp drama going on in 2026. That's a good thing for Marcus Freeman and the Irish fan base. We can get to remaining position battles and everything along those lines as this progresses. But guys, just wanted to start with over the weekend. We don't get many mini Sunday viewings like we had this past weekend, but I thought it was well-timed that we got to talk to Mike Brown, position wide receivers coach Mike Brown. That's where a lot of the questions still remain in terms of what type of talent will fill out where and how deep can they go at the wide receiver position.
We might have fewer questions if we had more access and we saw them running around, catching passes, running routes. We might have a little bit better idea. But right now, and I know some of our subscribers might even be in a question about, look, we know about Faison and Graham, but what about everybody else? And great houses look good. But yeah, you're right. It was timed well. I don't know how much exactly Mike Brown revealed, maybe a little bit more than Jaden Greathouse did in our interview with him, because he was pretty close to the vest with his comments. But yeah, I mean, and it's we do have a question on that. It's an understandable question. Like, everybody feels good about Faison and Graham. Okay, what about after that? What about Greathouse's, you know, hamstring? What about guys in rotation? How many guys in rotation? Understandable. There's a lot of questions still about the receiving corps, but I bet if we were in there a lot more, we would have, in our minds anyway, a lot more answers to the situation.
Yeah, we might not have to ask, like, does Mikey Gober ever beat Leonard Moore and get his bullets? It happens more often than you think it would, which I think is an interesting response because from Coach Brown, because, like, does that mean it happens once a practice? Like, it is such a situation where, like, that's a guy that we're not sure he can beat at all very often, but we have seen it at least once or twice. He's gotten him on slant routes, which I feel like is an area where if there's any area Leonard Moore can improve, that is the type of thing I know he's wanted to work on in the past. But yeah, I don't see him beating him on contested catches and things like that. So that would be the type of thing we would want to see against Moore specifically, but we have seen some practice clips against him doing against DJ McKinney and Tay Johnson and things like that.
We
don't see them when we're there.
We've probably seen Gilbert make more just plays and catches in person and on video that Notre Dame puts out than we saw all spring. Is that an exaggeration?
What do you mean in person?
We've seen him catch slants. We've seen him get the football in his hands. Yeah, I mean, nothing really extravagant per se, but we've seen him make.
Oh, practice number one, they played defense.
Right.
Yeah. Right. So yeah, that one he had a good practice. We haven't seen him. We should let people know no one in the media has ever seen him guarded by anybody since practice number one. Nobody. We don't see any offense or defense. It's stunning. It's shocking. It's rough. They used to put in one or two segments of offense versus defense. They catch against air. Caden Finley and Devin Fitzgerald made really nice catches defended by air when I was watching them yesterday. So that's good for they have that going. Ball guards them. They can do that. That's great.
I didn't see the Finley catch, but I did see the Fitzgerald awesome catch, and it was already by him. The ball was by him, and he one-handed it.
Yeah, Finley's was harder, really, like, in terms of, well, he'd be dead. But it was full speed post behind him, reached back, broke stride, and brought it back in, and stayed up. It was a really nice play. Again, covered by no one, so that might have been broken up or intercepted.
Yeah, I want to, Tim, if I could, okay, so there's a video out there, and Gilbert makes a play, and so the natural assumption across the Notre Dame airwaves, he's good now, he's arrived. Well, he made one play. We're guilty of it too. I mean, don't get me wrong. There's a tendency for us to overreact to it because we just don't get to see as much. But I don't know. Yeah, okay, we've seen Gilbert maybe make some plays on slants like early on. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I always hate to admit, we don't know that much, but you know, we get feedback, but we don't get to see that much.
It's important. That's why I brought up the Kenny Minchie thing. Because we never got to see it for ourselves. I mean, it's a pretty big deal. Guy we have not seen for ourselves, and I don't think people are seeing on the inside very often either. Speaking of wide receivers, is Quincy Porter. Now, remember, we were in there for 20 minutes exactly post-stretch. We did see Quincy Porter stretch with the team. He then went in. I did not go in. I shouldn't say he went with a pit, but he was not involved in individual drills, and I was down with the offense the entire time. He was not wearing a sleeve on his knee, for whatever that's worth, but no work at individual drills is not a great sign on August 16th. In those individual drills, Cam Williams did not participate in the breaking back of the ball drill, which you have to cut. Neither did Mylon Graham. Matt Shelton did, despite a heavy wrap on his right ankle.
Jeffrey.
God almighty, I'm going to do that again. Matt Jeffrey did. Matt Shelton did not. He would have gotten open deep.
He was nowhere to be found.
Yeah. That's what Michigan thought on defense back then, too. But Jeffrey did not then participate in the versus air drill, and neither did Cam Williams. They sprinted off to the side, but Mylon Graham did. So whatever their injuries are, they're different. I mean, Jeffrey's is obviously an ankle. Those guys all need to be involved, I think. And Mylon Graham, of course, entered the summer in great standing, but I think I still think there's work to be done with Notre Dame's receivers and CJ Carr, even though none of them think that.
Yeah, and the Porter point, I saw him working out in the pit, so that definitely, he came in with pads on and then didn't go out, at least for individual periods, which you would think that even early in spring practice, like, he was doing that. So I don't know if there's been some form of regression or he's just not working in at the rate they wanted him to, but yeah, it is interesting that he's not even...
Remember, Drew, it could be his day. Like, he is limited. That means he's not back to full go. So they could say, all right, today's your day in the pit for six periods. Like, we don't know really what limited means, except they're not out there doing everything. But Drew, to your point, KVA seems less limited than Porter, and he's on limited duty too.
Yeah, so does Ashton Craig. There are guys out there who seem at different pace. And I think to Mike Brown's comments, which I think were just a little like, we'll see with everyone kind of thing. But I don't know, reading between the lines a little bit, it doesn't sound like they're getting as much out of them as they probably would want to at this point.
Blake Hebert back, so he can compete for a reserve role. I don't know how much time he missed. We know he missed two practices, but we were in there for the other ones. Dallas Golden back and involved in the punt return drill. So,
yes.
I mean, I guess we could surmise that it wasn't a back reoccurrence. They wouldn't be throwing him out there in punt return drills a couple days later, I wouldn't think, if it was back. So that's good news. So Dallas Gold was in street clothes last Wednesday, correct?
Correct.
Yeah, well, that was last Wednesday. And yeah, we're a week later.
Last Wednesday to Sunday, it was a couple practices in between, yeah.
Yeah, it's hard to tell. I mean, you don't want to assume anything, but he didn't have any brace or noticeable limp or anything like that. So, I mean, there's other possible injuries it could have been, but the back was what I would guess, but you're right. He was out there and he was working with the nickels again. So was Jaden Sanders a little bit. He was kind of looked like he was floating between. So it's definitely good to have both of them back out there. Or Sanders has been out there, but seeing that he's still working a little bit at nickel, especially if Golden has been injured, which he has been since the summer and a little bit the spring too.
Tim Priester, we had quite a few questions on Kingston Vilaiamuasa, so I think we just discuss him here because Drew spent a lot of time with him. You were with him and Brian Jean-Marie, the first-year linebackers coach, and never underestimate the healing power of this guy. That's what we were told in the past. It happened. He got back and played great against Penn State after a knee injury in the playoff run, and he's ahead of schedule.
Yeah, he is ahead of schedule, and I think we've talked about this through the summer. I just... Because he's Kingston Vilaiamuasa, I expected him to be ahead of schedule, and he is. And that's huge. It's like you talking about Dallas Golden, Tim. You know, does he start at nickel? Probably not. But you need players like that out there. You need athletes like that out there. And, you know, KVA is a special football player at a position that's pretty special for Notre Dame. It's great to have all that depth, but you know, at crunch time, you want KVA rolling out there. And I'm not surprised that he's ahead of schedule because he's a great football player, which means he's a great athlete, which means he probably does have healing powers that lesser athletes don't have.
And it's just a really good sign that, I mean, we were like, well, where will he be by, like, BYU, for instance? And now that the target that seems very realistic is he's back for the Wisconsin game, now we know there's a good chance that when the season really hits, like starts hitting the important games, you're going to have a guy who I probably would have had third in my countdown if I would have known he was going to be this healthy potentially. Now you know he should be full go by the heart of the season when you really need that type of athlete who, honestly, for as good as this linebacker core is, like you still can't replace a guy like that who legitimately might be excellent at everything you're going to ask a linebacker to do.
Did we ever specifically talk about, let's say KVA was completely healthy, how we would have ranked 1, 2, 3?
We said 3. Drew and I both said 3.
Mm-hmm. I definitely would have Leonard Moore number 1.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's tough to choose to. Yeah, probably number 3.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard for me to drop CJ Carr any more than the one spot I dropped him.
Right,
Leonard Moore. But Priester, you mentioned Gallus Golden might not be the starter at nickel. Think about this: they had to use their number 2 nickel against A&M game number 2. They had to use their number 3 corner against A&M game number 2. They lost Leonard Moore during that game, and it was a 41-yard gain immediately. They had to use their third safety, part of A&M and part of Purdue, because of a targeting play. And by the time we regathered at Notre Dame, they were getting rid of their starting safety as a starter in Stroman. So, like, whenever you see this opening depth chart, there are so many more people that play for a college defense now than there used to be. I know people will look at our countdown and say, well, how can a starter be ranked number 30 and a backup be ranked 22? There's a handful of guys that are not starters that will be much better than starters. That's just the way rotations work these days.
It's the way the game's played today and the way it has to be played. If you don't have depth now, especially if you want to make a deep run into the playoffs, you're in a little bit of trouble.
Very quickly, guys, it turns out Indiana and Kurt Cignetti do want to play Notre Dame. He just has special ways of going about it. Since they are in the Big Ten and Notre Dame is an independent, he would like to have 2 home games and Notre Dame have 1 home game. I have a great idea for that. I would agree. I would play the first home game and the first road game, and then I would drop the other one because that's what everybody does all the time anyway. Say thank you very much. You go 2-0 or 1-1. Call him on his phone and say, all right, let's play. Let's go. Let's play.
I think his point would carry a little more credence if IU just didn't seem like they wanted to have the easiest non-conference schedule possible. It's not like they're like playing other.
Yeah, if you had Alabama on there already.
Yeah. So they clearly just seem like that. And I mean, the Big Ten is tough. Like, they're going to make the playoffs if they have you know, go 11-1. So why not help ensure that type of thing happens, I guess. But I don't know. Sometimes I feel like he comes up with these things and almost thinks he's clever, more clever than he is. But he had this idea in his head and he was ready to let it out there and see how people reacted. And I don't know.
When you win a national title at a place that's lost more games than anybody in the history of the sport, you can say whatever the hell you want to say.
Yeah. If he had lost that last game, we could all pile.
I think his response to.
So what should the response be?
Anytime, anywhere.
Yeah. Yes. We always try to bring back, like Brian Kelly brought Central Michigan back on the schedule just because, it ended up being Marcus Freeman, but I used to coach there, so it's a good one. You never see Kurt Cignetti at IU saying, I used to coach at Alabama. I'd like to bring them onto our schedule because I think that would be a good natural rivalry now with Indiana. Natural rivalries coming out. AP poll has not been released. This is not a podcast jinx because I don't care, but we're going to talk about it anyway for one reason. The AP poll will be released today, so everybody can talk about a poll that doesn't matter anymore, just like the rest of them. 12 of the 25 preseason AP teams did not make the postseason poll last year, Tim Priester. Half the poll.
Wow. That's bad. That's bad projecting. I didn't pick a preseason top 25 last year.
In fairness, 16-25 is tough. Like when you're 15-25 preseason.
I agree. I mean, I probably would have missed more than that. I don't know. You know, I mean, all you can go on is like people say, well, how can you project this year based upon last year's stats? Well, there's got to be some. You got to look at something as somewhat of a carryover, depending upon how many guys are returning offensively and defensively. But, you know, and the other thing, the huge thing is the schedule, of course, which lines up for some people better than it does.
Because I have a poll. Are you supposed to pick with schedules? Or are you supposed to pick the best teams?
I believe best teams.
Yeah, you're not supposed to say, I think this team has the weakest schedule, though, are you? Otherwise, you're just trying to
be. No, but I mean, when you're trying to project who finishes 5th, 6th, or 7th, I mean, I think it's just human nature for people to do that.
Yeah, I don't think you're trying to project who finishes, though, are you? I don't know this. Like, I would just pick the number one, like, my week one poll.
Who's the best right now? You mean when the season starts? Okay.
Otherwise, if someone loses, I'd be like, well, it doesn't matter that they lost. They'll be great in 2 weeks. You know, I feel like that's a weird way to. I'm sure. Phil Steele does 2 things. He does. This is my power poll for the play. Like these guys are gonna this easiest schedule type thing, and they're really good. I feel like That's a great question. I wonder how many of the 60.
Yeah, I never could
do that. I would just assume if you're going to vote every week, you can't say, well, Notre Dame's 0-2, but I think they're going to be great by week 12, so they're number three. You know, you would have to do it the way the games are going.
Yeah. I think the biggest thing I just want to add to this conversation is we're going to get a bunch of like people talking about how we don't need a preseason AP poll. We haven't seen any of them play. Like, let's not do this. But like, as you mentioned, like the AP poll is not relevant to anything anymore. It's for entertainment. It's for things to talk about. It's to get into these discussions. So I think it's great. And let's have some fun with it. And we'll see where Notre Dame's ranked. But like, yeah, it doesn't have to be that. We know we don't have any real information yet based on other than a little bit of practice access that all the reporters get and stuff. So it's just for fun at this point.
Unfortunately, the college football playoff poll is also an entertainment. The television show is entertainment. Right. It's not the poll's not. The poll decides a lot of important things in terms of financial backing for institutions and things and the opportunity to win or lose. But that's the television show is the issue with the rankings. I know people right. say the real issue was the rankings, but I mean the television show. If you can't have a television show that keeps changing its criteria every week, it just drives you crazy. Like you also can't say that Notre Dame and Miami were 8 spots apart when that first poll came out, and then all of a sudden they were together.
You can't change
it. Miami was too low at 18. That was silly. But like they weren't all of a sudden going 8 spots higher, and Notre Dame didn't move at all.
Well, you had two different chairmen or commissioners last year for the whatever reason it was, and they don't necessarily think like, well, I'm going to say it to justify this week, but like, I'm not going to be prepared for how this is going to come back to bite me in 4 weeks later or whatever. Like they're not professional spokesmen, but they're still asked to give these interviews afterwards too, where I think they kind of shoot themselves in the foot consistently.
Man, you can see the beads of sweat on the forehead of the guy that, right. And like every week it's like, God, I better not say anything wrong. And they usually do.
Well, they can't now. There's too many teams they have to talk about, and they don't have any idea where they're there. It's the TV show's got to go. It never will, though, because it's one of the most all that's talked about in college football. Very quickly, Tim Priester, before we go to segment two, I don't know if you saw David Hale of ESPN. He listed 5 tiers of championship contenders. So no reason to rank them, just championship contenders. Safest bets, IU, Notre Dame, Miami, Ohio State were his safest bets.
Whew, man, Ohio State's got a really, really challenging schedule, but it's Ohio State. I get that. But I think the other three have some pretty good odds with the schedule they're playing against. You always got to include Ohio State because they're always good.
Yeah, and it'll probably be preseason number one, Ohio State. Mm-hmm. I think. Trust issues was his next tier. Oregon, Texas, and UGA. And if you don't read it, you can figure out what the trust issues exist. For Oregon and Texas, I think UGA just might be there. Not as unbelievably supremely talented as they were in 21, 22, and 23.
Go ahead, Drew. Oh, Oregon is the one. I mean, I get that. I think he noted they're like 5-7 against top 15 teams under Lanning. So I get some of those. They're just, I mean, for instance, CBS Sports did their top 150 players. I think they had 10. Oregon did. Like, they are loaded. They have maybe the best quarterback. If I were going to pick somebody other than CJ Carr right now to win the Heisman, I would probably go with Dante Moore, another like Detroit area kid too. But so I think they're the one that if I had to, I guess, push back about them not being a safer bet, but I also get like maybe that you just don't trust Lanning at this point.
Well, and I understand. And, you know, Oregon and Texas haven't scaled a mountain. Georgia has a few years ago. I get that. But that's kind of incongruent putting them with that. But he's talking about this year specifically.
Yeah.
Georgia's, they're probably not where they were when they won. You know, back-to-back national titles, but they're still dangerous. It's just that, you're not going to have a whole lot of trust in Oregon and Texas because they've failed when you thought that they were going to continue advancing in the playoffs.
Next tier includes a Notre Dame opponent with BYU and a former Notre Dame opponent with USC, which I found surprising in the next tier. But the next tier is BYU, LSU, Oklahoma, A&M, Texas Tech, who could jump into that schedule range again. And USC. Texas Tech can fall into trust issues as well. Put it that way, because they did pay $55 million not to score a point in the playoffs last year.
I think BYU's really, really good.
And they dodge Texas Tech.
They do. They do not play Texas Tech during the regular season. Yeah, defensively, I like what they have defensively. And as I've mentioned a couple times, you don't like the revenge factor of Notre Dame skipping a bowl when they were going to play BYU. and their quarterback feeling like he was going to probably end up at Notre Dame and not ending up there. It's a little bit of extra motivation for the Cougars.
Drew Mentok, another tier is Ole Miss, Utah, Alabama, and Michigan. I actually would move Ole Miss up out of this tier compared to the other teams.
Yeah, I was definitely surprised to see Ole Miss coming back, especially with Trinidad Chambliss back too. Like, they have a proven playoff quarterback on the roster too, so I was surprised with that. And I agree with, like, USC being included in the previous tiers a bit off to me. They're getting a lot of love as, like, this might be Lincoln Riley's best team. USC, and I mean, they did have Caleb Williams win Heisman when he first got there. It seems a little overblown. And then they also went 6-6 with a Heisman Trophy quarterback the next year, I believe. So I just don't know that. I don't understand why you wouldn't have more trust issues with the USC this year.
You know, Ole Miss, I wonder if that's just a matter of saying, you know, it's not Lane Kiffin anymore, it's Golding as the head coach.
Yeah, I mean, that's good. That is totally fair. I would move them ahead of USC, though. That's a straight one for me. There's another reason I move them ahead of USC, especially since this is playoff, not ranking power of the team. Right. How about this six-game stretch? Oregon, Washington at Penn State, which is a lot of fun when you're on the West Coast. Back at out to Wisconsin, at Wisconsin. Bring home Ohio State to try to get well, and then travel back to Indiana. Six games in a row for USC. You trying to tell me they're going to be in that tier at the end of the year? I don't think so.
It's interesting they were so worried about having one game against Notre Dame might keep them out of the playoffs. And they're
By the way,
they did that to be at the beginning of the year, just in case. I don't know why that mattered. But
fly home and play Ohio State and then go right back and play Indiana. Well, be really good on those lines.
And that's why, if USC had just been just be truthful about the situation, we flew 19,000 miles last year.
I don't want to do it again.
And we don't. Yeah, we don't want it. We don't want it to be, you know, 24,000 miles instead of making stuff up.
They're hosting Notre Dame this year. They should have been like, right when that game ended. All right, that's it. We're done. That's what Notre Dame should pull on Sigetti. We agree to three games. Play two. Don't play the third. Final tier, and I think we all agree these teams probably won't win it. But Priester won Notre Dame opponent. Iowa, Louisville, Penn State, SMU, Tennessee, and Washington.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think offensively SMU is pretty dangerous. They've got a big time playmaker at the key positions, the playmaking positions. Defensively, that's where they might run into a little bit of trouble, especially in Notre Dame Stadium in the second half of November, when there's probably a lot on the line for Notre Dame in Notre Dame Stadium.
Segment two includes players lost, wide receivers running against air, coach speak, and our all Freeman team. So you guys start thinking really fast. We'll be back with segment two, Burning Up the Boards. We are back with segment two. We like to call it Burning Up the Boards. First question from Ground and Pound. Might have something to say about Mike Denbrock's offensive plan of attack there, Tim Priester, Ground and Pound. Now that you've seen guys run around in pads against air for the last 2 weeks, he's a reader, I guess, take a look back at your countdowns, your personal countdown, and name one player you think you might have overvalued and one you probably undervalued.
Well, I made a list because, you know, me and picking
you
one.
Like,
yeah.
Sure. I had radio, too, if you just read them all. So there,
right. I had difficulty. I had more difficulty picking guys that I overvalued, I thought, than undervalued. Certainly, Quincy Porter, we thought he would be practicing by now. I had him number 21. You guys probably had him somewhere around there, maybe a little higher. I don't know.
I had him 29 because I was wondering if he'd be practicing.
Yeah.
I thought he'd be
okay. And I wonder, I had Nolan James 24th. I wonder about that a little bit just because of what we've heard from Jaywon Sider talking about Jonas Walton. But those are the only two over. My first undervalued one for me is I had McKinney at number 23, and I'm thinking that he's going to be what they expected him to be at corner.
Yeah, I think, I mean, now that we know where KVA will be, I had him at 15. I think now I definitely undervalue just seeing where he is health-wise. We already discussed that. Quincy Porter at 25th might be too high. Also had Charles Jagasaw at 18th, and I think just seeing where he is, I don't anticipate. Maybe if this is a deep playoff run, he could be a guy who gets cracks in the rotation heavily or you know, even starts. But right now I feel less confident in counting on him being one of those top 20 players on the roster.
I think I undervalued, and I did put them very close to each other. Micah Gilbert at 30. I had Quincy Porter at 29, and that was obviously a choice by me putting them back-to-back. So I think Gilbert will be higher than 30. And, I mean, KVA had it 9, so if he misses 3 games, he's still around 7. But I won't go with KVA. So I undervalued Gilbert. I bet I overvalued a little due to the rotation. Hope I'm wrong, but I think I might have slightly overvalued Teyon Gray at 18. Francis, top 11. Let me put it this way. I had Brew first, Gray second, Onye third, Hughes fourth, Mokum fifth. I don't think I would have Gray second.
I'm sure we all probably underrated Mokum from the standpoint that he might start. I had him at 47.
I had him at 49.
And I had Gray at 13th, and Brew at 19th. So that's actually a good one. I probably would almost flip those right now.
Where did you guys, I don't know if you have it handy, but I had Bubba Frazier at 55. We don't know for sure he's going to be in the rotation, but certainly he's in the running for snaps in the slot.
Yeah, I'm 45th because he was with the second team in the spring. So at least that's higher than I would usually have a freshman like that. So I think knew he had a chance where he is now. I did have Devin Fitzgerald one spot higher, which now I'd probably air more towards Bubba Frazier at this point in fall camp being in the rotation.
I had him 49, and I had Fitzgerald ahead of him, and I had in between the two Elijah Burris, and we've seen more from we've heard more about Frazier. We haven't seen any more.
Burris has been banged up.
That would be part of it. But it's
One guy that I didn't realize I was underrating him until I saw his first punt. I have Scaife at number 40.
Let's hope he stays at number 40 on his 12 punts this year or something like that.
Well, that's true. But that opened everybody's eyes a week ago Thursday.
He was the loudest punter we've ever heard.
No doubt.
All right. Question number 2 is a two-parter about the wide receivers from Tally Alley. High potential but unproven talent at wide receiver. Do you envision more in-game rotations or maybe game-by-game changes in the rotation until guys start to emerge? And then Andy Quebec wants to know, how do you feel about the receiver room so far? Besides Faison and Graham, is there another you feel has good chemistry with Carr?
I don't think there are too many receiver coaches that, like, okay, we're going to go with these 6 guys, and that doesn't work out, you shuffle in 3 more. Those decisions are made during the week. So I'm pushing back on the whole in-game stuff, and it's during the week where you decide, okay, this is our core of receivers that we're going to go with.
Yeah, I think you're going to see a lot of Faison and Graham, assuming he's healthy. Both really, I guess, assuming they're healthy. But I think they're going to lean heavily on a couple of the reliable guys. But you might see if Gilbert isn't performing as high as maybe they think he can. Like, Bettis has done some stuff in practice. Maybe they give Kim Williams a shot. Like, they might do some more creative things at certain spots in the wide receiver rotation. But I think getting Faison, Graham, Great House if he's healthy too, like getting those guys heavily involved will be something they lean on. So I think there will be kind of discrepancies in the snaps based on position.
What I find interesting, I asked Mike Brown how many receivers he thinks he will get in his rotation. And he said, in a game day rotation. And he said, you're probably looking at 6, and maybe you could work in a 7, which leaves 8, right? 8, really have done, 8 other receivers. I don't think you have 8 scout team receivers, though. So the 6 and 7, they're going to lock in 6 for Wisconsin. They'll lock in 7 for Rice, hopefully, because somebody can be allowed to play in the Rice game, for crying out loud. Then you wonder, do they find room for another one? But also, so one of those 7 gets hurt. I think they're just more comfortable with the 6 or 7 rotation thing. The problem is you have to have, like, 9 ready to go, right? For 2 injuries, you have to have a string ready to go. But I don't think coaches love playing 9 receivers. They don't trust 9 receivers.
No, that's too many. We've never run across a receivers coach in Notre Dame that wants to play that many. Yeah. You know, Great House looks great. He looks fine. I would say that, you know, that could jinx him, but jinxes aren't real.
No such thing.
Yeah. Jinxes are like leprechauns. They're really not real.
He did point out, Mike Brown, that he was able to play 8 in 2024. But it was 8 veterans. Like, the youngest guy was Faison there. You had all those guys. You had Mitchell. And really, I mean, I wouldn't say Jaden Harris was heavily involved, but Jaden Harrison, Chris Mitchell, Bo Collins, and then the guys like Greathouse, Faze, and Blanket on the other. Who else is involved in that receiving core? But he was able to work in eight a lot there. I don't think there's eight on this group that will work in together. Eight guys play, but I mean, I don't think they're going to work in together. Can you guys name the who would you put in the six-person rotation right now? Want to hold off for a week for that, or do you want to try it before Marcus Freeman talks?
Well, we know the starting three. And then, okay, so you have Faison.
Four are clear. Greathouse, Faison, Graham, and Gilbert.
Right.
Who's next?
Man, it's tough to... Go ahead, Drew.
I would put Bettis in the six right now. I think, especially with Porter out, like I think we've seen him out there even in the tempo stuff. I think he was out there with the first team one day, which I know that doesn't mean as much as a team period, but I think I've liked what I've seen out of him. And after that, I mean, I think Elijah Burris, if he had been healthy, I would feel more comfortable putting him in there. And I think he fits in with what else they need on the other side of the field. But right now it might be Bubba Frazier just because of that speed element.
Yeah. I mean, he's stayed healthy, and because he's slot oriented. Yeah. I would say he's into six. Who do you have, Tim?
I have Jeffrey. After talking to Mike Brown.
Well, that's fair. That's fair. Yeah.
He said he's doing an unbelievable job. Really, really just fun to watch his growth. Unfortunately, we didn't have him in the spring. Getting him back and watching him from where he was, incredibly impressive. Taking that he didn't have a spring to go through, I'm really excited where he is right now. We'll see where he ends up. And then he did not come in.
I don't look. A guy's a walk-on, was a walk-on, is a walk-on. If he's making plays, he's making plays.
Much of a walk-on, though, either. I think they probably pay him more than they pay some of the others.
Well, that's true. Yeah. That's right. Originally, the old terminology.
And Notre Dame, the wide receivers definitely have to block, too. And he was somebody who also had that specialist role a little bit in like short yardage situations. So we know he's reliable for that specific role, too.
Like, I just don't think people should get all worked up about that. They're not going to target him 70 times this year. They're going to occasionally target him and let him block, and you get the football in his hands. And he's a good athlete, whether he was a walk-on before or not.
So was their best receiver. He was also a walk-on who played lacrosse.
Right. It just doesn't matter. What matters is what you can put on film. And he puts a bunch of good stuff on film. But again, I don't think he's going to be taking too many receptions away from the quote scholarship guys, the original scholarship guys.
Our next question is from Podcast Ponderosa. Think of your personal all Freeman team, which spans four seasons. You don't have to list it. Who from the current team will break into your all Freeman team that isn't already on it? Obviously, this eliminates Leonard Moore.
Tim?
Well, Leonard Moore is, and Benjamin Morris would be the corner. So, I mean, Watts is one of the safeties, and I guess my other safety would be Don Shuler. So, Tay Johnson could break in it right away. Tay Johnson's one. My linebackers, Traore. Traore's not on it yet. Boubacar Traore will break in it. It wouldn't be fair to, I think he's a better player than Foskey, but that's not fair to Foskey to say he's already on it. That's not true.
Yeah, go ahead, Tim.
And the last one would be, I think Francis Brew will break onto my all Freeman team.
Those three defensive players are the ones that I chose. Troy Brew and Tay Johnson. No, Tay's not quite there. Watts has to be on there, and Shuler's just got a little bit more experience. I think the greatest opportunity to break into that is at receiver. I mean, depending upon how many receiving spots you want to leave. You have Malachi Fields because of the deep threat. Who else would who's on that list?
Nobody from 22 or 23.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I'd say Faison probably already has to be on.
He's already on it.
Yeah, he's already on it, so maybe not. That's a great one. There won't be a tight end breaking on this year. I can go ahead and tell you guys all that. Michael Mayer and Mitchell Evans have that on lockdown for a little while.
Nor will Will Black probably won't be unseating the left tackle Joe Alt.
No, that's not a possibility. A lineman could break on there, though. Like, they haven't had great. Anthony Knapp could break on it.
Yeah.
He might already actually be on it. Maybe not.
He's only played left tackle, so he couldn't be there.
Definitely not.
Yeah. Okay. I think if Astrid Craig is finally healthy, that it could be the best. Because Jarrett Patterson moved to guard his Freeman's first year, so they still need a center that I think you could reliably put there as well.
Kirby Lambert could be better at right tackle than Blake Fisher.
Lambert is somebody that I wrote down as well.
Expect him to be. Here's a question. Is CJ Carr on yours already from last year, or was it Riley Leonard for his leader leading to them to the final?
I thought about this. I think I have Carr already there just because of the different things he could
again.
Do.
If he never played again, would he, you look back in 5 years and be like, ah, CJ Carr was there?
I think by the end of the year, too, I mean, I think I'm taking a little bit of that into account, which we also take. Leonard had the four games in the playoffs, I think, is something we remember. Finally, so I guess you know Leonard could do it, and I guess I'm saying I think Carr could do it, but I think just given the different dimensions it allows you to do with your offense, I would go with him.
Well, I mean, obviously CJ Carr has a higher upside than Riley Leonard overall, but I think right at this moment, Riley Leonard, the quarterback that led you to the national championship game, yeah, I'd put him there.
So the definitive answer is CJ Carr is the guy that could jump on his list, because we all think he will at the end of the season.
Yes.
We tricked ourselves on that one.
Question number four from newcomer CMU Pens fan. Which undrafted non-transfer player will Notre Dame miss the most from last year? Now, let me say, I had a question about this one. He says non-transfer. Does he mean a guy that transferred into Notre Dame or somebody that transferred out of Notre Dame? Because I
transferred out, so you couldn't use Burnham.
So I can't use Burnham,
KK Smith, or people like that.
Okay, so I can't use I can't use Kenny Minchie.
Yeah, if you're going to use KK Smith, that's probably a bad podcasting moment. But yeah, I would say that. Well, yeah, you can't use Minchie or Burnham.
I would.
I mean, I think I would still almost go Will Pauling, even though I think in terms of positional need, he's not as valuable, but he still was a productive player. He was tough. He was a captain after transferring into Notre Dame. He ran a 4.37 at Notre Dame's pro day. Like, that is still a level of speed you'd want to get out there. And I don't know, maybe if you have him, you change how you look at the boundary receiver position a little bit to get all those guys on there. I'm not sure, but I think it's hard to go out with a Jalen Stroman or even a Devontae Smith. Maybe if he had been healthy all year and played well from the jump, you might think differently, but I think you almost just have to go with him. And James Rendell, I mean, I feel like they upgraded Australian punters potentially, so I don't even know if you would go with him.
Pauling was the first guy that I wrote down. You let him in touchdown receptions. He got off to a bit of a slow start, but was really good.
He might make the 49ers.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm not sure we're going to say that Matt Jeffrey and Bubba Frazier would make the 49ers right now, so I will go with Will Pauling on that one. Yeah, throw Will Pauling in the mix at wide receiver. That'd be great. Devonta Smith is an interesting person here. I mean, I think Christian Gray will be better in coverage. I think Devonta Smith is just a much more rugged player up front. And if you could use them both, that would probably be best. Would you choose Smith over Pauling?
I wouldn't because he wasn't available enough.
Yeah.
You pick him over either of the transfers they got? I don't think I mean, obviously we know he got hurt, but I don't think I would either. So I feel like that makes him hard to then be like, oh, I want to put him in this rotation if he's would be their third defensive back transfer in this.
Yeah, class. We just remember he never ended up playing against a good team, so it really hurts.
Right.
You know, I mean, you missed the A&M game and it pretty much knocked him out of the playoff. We don't remember much of Devonta Smith. He was a good player when he was out there, but boy, he missed a lot of time. Yeah. He just played against teams.
I think we all feel like Kirby Lambert has a chance to be really, really good right tackle, just an offensive lineman in general, but he's moved to right tackle. But we probably underestimate Emil Wagner a little bit that started 28 straight games. They won 24 during that time. I realize he wasn't the most physical guy. He was more of a finesse blocker than he was, you know, a physical blocker. I just wanted to throw his name out there because I think he's a little bit underrated, but I think we all believe I'm speaking for myself. Kirby Lambert has a chance to be big and strong and physical. That is his game.
I just feel the Miami game from last year is just hard to get on my head with Wagner. I'm sure he was cramping and stuff like that, but that was an amazing defensive line. But I think I hold on to that a little bit with him. And you at least would think maybe Lambert could hold up better against that level of competition. But I agree. He's the only one we didn't mention. So I'm glad you did throw his name out there.
From Mr. Stuller, This is the time of year full of coach speak. Everyone is improving and making an impact. The team has never been closer. Everyone is the best shape of their lives, et cetera, et cetera. This guy is spot on, by the way. How do you as reporters separate the grain from the chafe? What type of coach speak gets the biggest eye roll?
Well, we need
coach speak from a player last on Sunday.
Yeah, we need Samson needs to be on here because he's probably the biggest eye roller at positive comments. And me, I'm like, oh wow, he said something positive. I'm so damn gullible about
this
stuff.
They do have 15 great receivers. Okay.
Let me give you an example because this just came up over the weekend with the quote unquote stories that I threw out there. I mean, both Boubacar Traore and Gurbi Lambert called Bryce Young a freak. Now,
he's on a list called the freaks list. So that helps.
He is. Yeah, right. Okay. He is on that list, but they gave me specific examples of what he's done on the practice field to warrant that. Now, when something like that is said by another player, when it wasn't actually solicited,
right,
then I think it's significant. But it's a great question because, yeah, there is a lot of eye rolling that goes on with coach speak. And if we were in that same situation, we would coach speak our way through it as well, because that's what coaches do this time of year.
Yeah, I agree. I was going to use the Jalen Snead talking about Mel Mukum. Like, we asked about defensive tackles, but for him to go out of his way to say that and also give him kind of a backhanded compliment by saying he couldn't have played at Notre Dame last year and now he can, like, you're not going to say that if you don't generally mean something like that. So I think the most, I guess the frustrating part for me on the coach speak is if you ask about a player and they like loop in like nine other guys, yeah, like, well, they're also playing really well. It's like, well, that doesn't really give me a usable answer on everyone, actually. So I think for my purpose, for my job, that can often be the most frustrating.
Yeah. When you ask about a player and you get everyone's doing great each and every day, getting better each and every day. So my number one thing, though, and I've forgotten to bring it up a couple times, is when if you ask a player, this is more of a spring thing, I would never ask this question in August camp, but like, you know, what the coach has asked them to improve on over the, because this is a specific question, what your position coach asks you to improve on over the winter or going into the summer, and they say, just my consistency. Like, dude, that is not a trait. I know you gotta be okay. So you need to improve on absolutely everything then, like, is what I want to say out loud. But if you don't say, I have once said to someone, and it was Kyle Rudolph, you can't say consistency. And he started laughing because he was about to say consistency.
Well,
also, he had less to improve on, so he could laugh all he wanted.
I don't think the current players aren't necessarily coached to do coach speak. They're encouraged to let their personality show. It was during the Weiss era when they were going into interviews, when they were absolutely instructed, do not say anything, you know, don't say anything.
Yeah, he told them not to, right? He ruined Robert Blanton, was the best interview you guys ever had back then. Yeah.
And I talked to Robert Blanton a couple years later, and who knew he had such a great personality?
Yes. I will say, yesterday, what's today? Is today Monday? It is Monday. Yesterday we had access, and I've always enjoyed talking to Jaden Greathouse, and he gave us the most polite 1,900-word salad in the history of interviews yesterday. There was literally no one we asked about that was answered about as a player. And I've had great interviews with Greathouse before, so I think maybe he maybe looks at his view as a senior member now of the team that maybe doesn't want to talk about guys that are
in. Yeah, and I can understand that to an extent.
Although ask him the toughest guy to go against in the slot, and he mentioned he said everybody is the exact same ability of guarding everybody in their.
Did he mention Carson Hobbs too?
No. Carson Hobbs still mentioned Carson Hobbs.
Just to quickly wrap up the question, I think the big thing is you're not going just on one thing the coach says. It's what we're seeing when we do get practice access, what other people are saying, what you're hearing, where they're like,
yeah.
What Snead said about Mukum, for instance, I know this isn't coach, also lines up with what we'd been seeing in practice, where he was in the rotation, him making plays. Like, you put it all together. If Mike Brown had been saying Porter looks amazing when he's out there, and then we're seeing him in the pit at the last two practices, then you're like, okay, something doesn't line up here. So you're kind of just using all the different bits of information you get to paint the best picture you can.
I will say quickly, not to speak ill of Carson Hobbs because he just got injured for Florida State. Hope he makes a full recovery. He hurt his knee. He did say he was faster than Jeremiah Love last year when we started talking about it. I never saw that on the football field. That means Malachi Toney is the fastest human being in the world.
he may very well be.
Well,
Drew, I think that's a good point that when you see, when we see it and then you hear it, it validates in your head. It validates. Okay, well that makes sense. Like, I did a defensive report early. Well, the first day when McKinney had the long white sleeves on, like, and I put in my report, like, man, he looks like he's got the longest darn arms. And then one of the first things Aaron Henry said was about the length of his arms. So, you know, so when you hear some stuff validates what you see, other stuff you're like, I'm not sure that that's correct, but I'll respect what he says about it. And you work your way from there.
Our next question is from No_Ragrats. In light of recent events, Indiana, USC, Texas Tech, Alabama, or other, name your ideal quarterfinals matchup for Notre Dame.
Indiana is more of a semifinal championship matchup for Notre Dame. So I'll go, in light of recent events, USC would be the best.
Right.
Obviously, I got to go USC. I was tempted to do I tried to get Notre Dame to play Texas Tech last week on this podcast on September 19th. I got to go USC because that means they're good, and the build up to that would be phenomenal before that game.
I can't argue that. It would be phenomenal. I looked at it from the perspective of which team do I feel the best about Notre Dame beating. And I see that, and I respect what Phil Steele has to say. He's got Alabama in the top 10. I don't buy it. I think they're soft. I think they proved last year that they were soft. They also have a stretch of Georgia at Tennessee, Texas A&M at LSU, that I don't think that they'll, I mean,
this gets them in there if you want to face them.
Yeah.
Puts them in the quarterfinal. So they got through somebody.
Okay, there I am going back to the schedules, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Now, yeah, I'd like to see Notre Dame play Alabama this year. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard not to go with USC given just all the situation there that USC wanted to play them at the beginning of the year. It'd be kind of poetic justice if maybe that's who they ended up playing at the end of the year in the quarterfinals. So there could be some interesting things there. Just a quick note, the AP poll did come out. USC is 14, Notre Dame is 4th, IU 6th. So some of those teams are pretty ranked high. Texas Tech, who doesn't have their quarterback, but they're in this question, is 12th. Alabama is 13th. So just giving a quick update on that.
Is Miami 7th,
correct.
Ohio State's 1. Did you say
Ohio State 1, yeah. Oregon 2, Georgia 3, Notre Dame 4, and Texas 5.
Then IU, I would have thought Texas instead of Georgia, and Georgia behind Notre Dame, if you were making me guess what everybody did. That's interesting. Would it be more fun? We're trying to have fun here, right? We're not trying to say, well, the Notre Dame has to lose for this to happen. Would you like to have Notre Dame play USC in the home playoff game instead of the quarterfinal, which means Notre Dame's like the 5, 6, 7, or 8 seed? I mean, for a sporting event, that's pretty high on my list.
I agree with that. I want what's most advantageous.
You can't go from like the fan perspective. You got to go from like you're covering it. Don't you want to cover Notre Dame USC December 18th in South Bend?
Absolutely. Yes, I've covered 30 some Notre Dame USC games. Never I love December. Covering. Never in December.
You have covered some for playoff spots. They were just called championship game spots.
Yeah, never in December. Never in January. No, I have not.
I think as long as the one loss isn't Miami, I really want that rivalry to come back in full force, which requires Notre Dame to win at home this year against them
in a
competitive game. Rice. So
the one loss,
Rice. Yeah, just let them lose to Rice. You know, then they beat all the other good teams and potentially USC.
Question number 7 from Panini_Man: project the top 5 players in total yards, rushing plus receiving, in 2026 in order. What order do you guys have for the top 5 rushing/receiving producers for Notre Dame in 2026?
Go ahead, Drew.
So, Neas Williams, number 1, followed by Faison. I think he has a chance to get into that like 800-plus yard mark this year. I'm going to put this out there. I'm going to go Jonas Walton, 3rd.
Whoa.
I'm starting to have a lot more confidence in him, shooting my shot there a little bit, followed by Mylon Graham and Nolan James.
Interesting. Neas Williams 1 and Jordan Faison 2. And I'm pretty confident if that doesn't happen, that's a problem. 3, I'm shooting my shot too. Jaden Greathouse. 4, Mylon Graham. And five, I'm going to say, this is a tough one for me to say. I'll go Nolan James five. I was thinking of Micah Gilbert, but I feel like the second running back is going to be more than the fourth or fifth receiver.
So. Yeah. Drew, I think it's an interesting listing of Walton. What do you think? He's going to move ahead of Nolan James Jr. or?
That's kind of how I'm
eventually
projecting it. And I just think he's going to add so much. And I think even if, for instance, like they're both getting a similar amount of carries and that's how the rotation works out, I think he could get a lot more yardage out of his carries than maybe what we're going to see out of James. And I think there could be some creative ways they use him to get him the ball because he is so explosive. I think it's just going to be hard to not get him on the field. Whereas last year, it made sense with the two running back rotation when like they did everything well. Like if it's James and Neas Williams, they're missing that explosive one hit scored touchdown ability. And I think Walton adds that, and that's going to get him on the field.
Well, that's fair. I have this stuck in my head about what Sider's trying to do with the running backs and catching the football. And Nolan James he's a guy that's split out. I'm not saying what you're saying can't happen, but I'm going to have James in my top five because I think he's going to catch some passes as well. So, like you guys, Aeneas Williams one, Jordan Faison two, Mylon Graham three. I have Nolan James four and Jaden Greathouse five.
I already have a regret. No regrets was the question up there a little bit ago. I already have a regret not putting Jonas Walton in there, man. That's just a good point that Walton can get 330 yards with regular carries plus 265-yard runs a lot easier than Nolan James can. You know, it's one of those things where, but Nolan, I am really interested to see. It won't happen for Wisconsin because you're going to be relying on Aeneas Williams and Nolan James. I don't even think you're not going to see the future of Jonas Walton for that game. But I'm really interested to see Jonas Walton when they head out to North Carolina for that game or Purdue in one of those situations when he's fully vested and knows everything he needs to know.
It's not coach speak when he says what he said about Walton?
No, but I do believe McCullough said in the past, like, he loved Aeneas Williams. Remember, he's like, I can't put him out there against Texas A&M. That's like coaching malpractice. And Sider's kind of like, well, I'm not putting Williams out there against Miami. You can't. Right. I mean, Williams got hurt too. But so I don't think you'll see Jonas Walton as much. But boy, oh boy, that week 3, 4, 5, that's gonna be interesting. Next question from Lake Michigan 25. I forgot we had this question about Bubba Frazier. Bubba Frazier seems primed to take some punt return duties. Outside of his freshman status, what about his abilities makes him an attractive candidate for this role compared to guys like Faison, and he added Talich, who is not in that, but let's say compared to guys like Faison, Greathouse, and who else we see back there, Dallas Golden, right?
Yeah, go ahead, Drew.
I mean, I think one thing is speed. Mike Dembrock, the way he talked about him, he might be the fastest guy they have on offense, so I think that's one thing. Over a guy like Faison, I mean, I think Faison is going to be leaned on a lot on offense, and not that at Notre Dame, you could be a starter All-American caliber player and still do special teams. But I still think, like, if you can find a comparable player to get out there in a place where you can get hit, you can get banged up, it might make more sense over a guy who I think Faison might be the best option in terms of just physical ability. But if you can get somebody comparable out there, that makes a lot of sense to me.
It makes sense. I don't know that you're going to take a top 25 punt returner from 2025 off the field, which is what Faison was. Yeah, I like, is Bubba Frazier prime for taking some punt return duties? I don't. Kick return? I mean, that kick return maybe makes sense, but I don't know exactly how he unseats Faison unless they're just trying to protect Faison, who's going to get a whole bunch of touches with the offense.
When I was talking about Greathouse talking to the media, he did say one thing that I thought was important. I asked him why, you know, you're back there on, we see you back there the last few years on punt return in practice. He's always one of the candidates back there. Aeneas Williams has been a candidate too. And he said something that was kind of revealing. He's like, Faison's on a lot of teams, man. When he needs a break, I feel like I can do the same thing he does. He's like, I can, if you need me to catch it, I'll catch it. If you need me to take it to the house, I'll take it to the house. So he basically said, I mean, we're not replacing Jordan Faison, but he is on a lot of special teams. And if you need a break, that's why they would need more than one. Interesting point about Bubba Frazier on kick return, because that is as wide open as it gets. I apologize to questioners that ask about who's the kick returner without Jadarian Price. We don't know yet. So we don't haven't seen him on kick return drills. So maybe Bubba Frazier could be one of those guys, because he's, you know, as long as you're smart about it and don't fumble, he's electric. You get three chances if you hit two of them.
Yeah. And I mean, and realistically, the guy that leads your team in kick returns ends up having about 15.
Yeah. So I'm saying if you get like three chances to break one, you had to break two of them. I remember Jaden Harrison, I'm sorry. He broke the most important one in 30 years, but I believe they were talking about, remember against Northern Illinois, he actually should have broken the kickoff return, and that would have saved that lot. They're like, I thought we should have had that one. It was.
That's right. Yeah.
Break that. Like, that is the one, you don't get that many chances. Yeah.
So that's a, that one kept Marty Biagi up at night.
Yeah. Yeah. And well, then he made up for it. So in the history of making up for things.
Yeah.
Before we read our last question, Drew Mantuck has a deal for you people.
Yeah, and just in addition to all the wonderful messages from our other sponsors, I also want to point out that you can now save 60% on Irish Illustrated through September 1st with a discounted annual and full-priced monthly subscriptions for new members. And your first month is just $1. And to sign up, go to irishillustrated.com, and you'll see a banner or a story to click on the front page.
Final question from Tim Priester's favorite moniker here. It's all ball bearings. You are a Notre Dame position coach. Pick one. And you have to go in and discuss with your boss, Marcus Freeman, your biggest concern this week as the camp portion comes to a close.
Come on, guys. It's all ball bearings now.
I knew you'd like that one.
I'm going to go with Guduli, because no matter how you slice it, you've got all freshman quarterbacks back there, and now – you know, your redshirt freshman has missed however many days. And, you know, and again, as I said in Thursday Thoughts, and I, you know, we didn't want to jump the gun, but we had to say this could be, there could be something here. You hope that it's not, you know, a personal matter with family and stuff, but he is back. And so hopefully everything is okay there. But, there could be a divided opinion among the offensive coaches, kind of like there was last year. Only in this instance, who would be the number two? I think Gerard has the highest upside. I think Grubbs is better than we anticipated. But there's something to be said for a guy that's been in the program and that can and keep things under control out of the gate. So there's a decision to be made there, no doubt.
I think I'm going to go offensive line and just the discussion of what you're doing exactly with Ashton Craig. Like, at some point soon, you have to really make a commitment, I feel like, to where he's going to play. And I think Joe Rudolph, if we're again going back to kind of reading between the lines, clearly is much more confident in Anthony Knapp and Will Black than he is having Sullivan Absher next to Kirby Lambert. So do you pull the trigger there and kind of move Craig fully back to guard, or do you let him keep competing at center, even though I think you might have more confidence in Joe Otting than you would in Sullivan Absher, even though you have a 6'7", 320-pound former like blue chip prospect there. Like, I think that's a tough decision, and it's something they're going to have to commit to. It kind of depends on what Craig's timeline is to be fully back, but we know he's taking contact now. We heard that from KVA yesterday. Like, he's had to take on blocks, so he's doing stuff. But like, where is that position battle, and when do you kind of commit to a spot for that guy?
I guess since you guys took the two obvious ones for me, I'm going to go to wide receiver, Coach Mike Brown, and he has to walk into Marcus Freeman and say, I have four guys I trust, and I have four other guys. What do you need big picture from these other two receivers I'm putting in the game? Do you need the guy that will block? Do you need the guy that might break one? Do you need a guy that would be really good if he knew his playbook? Do you need a true boundary receiver? I think the question is, what do we need to make the group best? And you have to understand, relying on four guys to start it out.
I also think, you know, you could run into the situation at defensive end where you need a little bit more pass rush, so Charlie Partridge would have that conversation, although Kingston Viliamuasa and Jalen Snead are about as good as it gets coming off the edge as true linebackers.
That's a more fun conversation to have when you have to go in with a problem. So do I use these really good linebackers as an extra pass rusher, or should I go with this five-star freshman or the guy we got from Alabama or just Bryce Young? Coach, what do you think? Like, I don't know. Figure it out yourself. No. Actually, Marcus Freeman would probably have an opinion on that one, much more so. But anything on the offense. Yeah, no, that's there's not a lot of holes. That's a good one, though, Tim. There's a question came up on our board, too. Who's the other pass rushing end?
Yeah, it's those two guys.
Yeah.
And they're you know, I mean, Jalen Snead, there was an interesting comment. Were either of you guys around when Jean-Marie made the comment about Snead? I asked about Snead. You know, he just talked about, well, I mean, kind of like, you know, what holds him back. And it's just like his instinct is to just go for it as opposed to reading it. And he's, you know, he's 5 years into this and he brought that up and he's new to Jalen Snead. It wasn't like he was ripping on him, but it was like, okay, well, what does he need to do? Well, sometimes he just wants to, you know, he just wants to go for it and not read it. And I think that's always kind of been the rap against Snead. But coming off the edge, that's a different story. KVA coming off the edge is as good as it gets when he's fully healthy.
Well, hopefully the media will go for it a little more in our next session with Marcus Freeman. That is Friday, August 21st. I believe that will be camp wrap. That's probably why we're talking to him.
Maybe named captains that day, too.
I don't know. We'll have a lot of questions about the, you know, some of the, he doesn't love naming names either, but we'll have a lot of questions about some of the position battles, probably make things a little bit more clear for us. There is no practice viewing that day for Irish fans looking for practice reports. We do have one next week, however. But until we will be back with Friday post Marcus Freeman, Irish Illustrated Incident Analysis. And prior to that, Thursday, August 20th, one more Irish Illustrated Insider podcast. For Drew Mentock and Tim Priester, I am Tim O'Malley. Thanks for watching and listening. Irish Illustrated Insider.